decades, Dean.
Yeah, he's clearly moved to the left, which, again, obviously that responds to pressure. I mean, the progressive segments of the Democratic Party are far more important today than they were 30 years ago. So that's clearly behind his movement. But it's a great thing to see. I mean, again, I don't know how much he'll be able to accomplish in this Congress. But I'll just point out, you're referring, well, we had the section on his speech from about climate change. We've turned the dial on that. I don't mean to say, you know, obviously climate change is going to continue to be an enormous problem. We're going to suffer enormous hardships here and elsewhere in the world, of course. But we've so much changed the picture with his infrastructure bill, and particularly the Inflation Reduction Act. You now have companies that are all in on electric cars, massive industries in terms of solar and wind. That can't be turned back. So that is really, really huge. Now, obviously, we're going to have to do a lot more. We have to keep the pressure up. But we have to recognize what's been done. We are moving forward with a clean energy transition. That's not stoppable.
Well, Dean Baker, we want to thank you so much for being with us from Astoria, Oregon, senior economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and Congressmember Delia Ramirez, Democrat of Illinois, speaking to us from the Capitol. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Felsmeyer-Burke, Dina Gusder-Messiah-Rhodes, Noreen Schaeff, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, and Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Laguerre, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Plugged In on KBOO is a radio show dedicated to underground electronic music. The show is hosted by DJ Tronic and features deep house, tech house, techno, drum and bass, breakbeats, future bass, downtempo, and more. Plugged In frequently has local producers and DJs on the show, and we provide info about upcoming events in Portland, including free ticket giveaways. Plugged In airs the first and third Friday of every month from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Pacific time.
This is KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Governor Tina Kotek demands a clean house at the OLCC.
The Multnomah County Central Library will close for repairs again next month.
And in national news, Biden gives a State of the Union address to jeers and applause.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, February 8th, 2023. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek demands a clean house at the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission, or OLCC. Longtime director Steve Marks was pushed out earlier this month. Today, Kotek wrote a letter to the OLCC after finding out about a damaging internal investigation. Kotek says she found out that Marks and other leaders used their position for personal gain. She wrote, quote, "His behavior is wholly unacceptable. I will not tolerate wrongful violations of our government ethics laws. I urge the commission to install new leadership and remove the managers and executive leadership who have taken advantage of their access and authority to benefit themselves," end quote. The internal investigation hasn't been made public yet, but it's believed to be about OLCC's process for allocating extremely rare and valuable bottles of liquor. The makers of these rare and valuable liquors set some aside for customers. Then the OLCC sends some to stores, some to bars and restaurants, and some are offered to the public through lotteries. It's a unique program where the rare bottles get a fixed markup so they can be purchased at much lower cost than Washington and California, provided you get lucky. The internal investigation may be about OLCC leaders setting some aside, some rare and valuable bottles aside for friends and allies. Kotek has asked the Attorney General to conduct an independent civil investigation as well.
Multnomah County's biggest library will likely be closed for most of 2023. The iconic Central Branch is located in downtown Portland. It will be getting significant repairs and improvements starting around March 11th and lasting for 9 months. This is the second closure of the Central Library, which was also shuttered for improvements for 3 months in 2022. The 110-year-old building will receive new paint and carpets, renovated restrooms, and technology upgrades. The library system is the state's largest provider of free high-speed internet. Many people who live near the Central Library rely heavily on that service. Internet will still be available throughout the closure, in a new spot on Southwest Washington Street, less than half a mile away. When the library reopens, it will have more comfortable furniture and about three times as many places to charge devices, like phones. The whole Multnomah County Library system is getting a major upgrade, thanks to a 2020 voter-approved bond. The Albina and North Portland libraries will be the next to close for renovations, but no dates have been announced yet. Multnomah County Library spokesperson Sean Cunningham said, quote, "With every current or upcoming closure, the library will work to provide people with information on other locations that they're able to use, how to use the library online, or other ways to connect with library resources and services. The simple fact is, we're entering a period of disruption and inconvenience for a lot of people, so that the library can deliver on its promise to expand and modernize," end quote. When all of the construction and renovation is finished, the Multnomah County Library System's physical space will be about 1.5 times its current size.
Oregon lawmakers are considering how to continue to fund the statewide crisis line, 988. Last year, when the suicide hotline launched, it relied on federal pandemic funds. The 988 suicide and crisis line connects people in mental health crises or their families to trained counselors who can help diffuse the situation and direct callers to resources. The lines are answered by the Portland nonprofit Lines for Life and the Marion and Polk County nonprofit Northwest Human Services. House Bill 2757 would impose a 50-cent a month tax on cell phone lines to fund the crisis line into the future. Greater funding would also mean the opportunity to expand to more specific crisis line operators in different parts of the state, especially rural ones. Proponents of the bill says it's an important step to address the healthcare issues in the state, and that 988 callers are much less likely to face police than if they called 911. Lines for Life in Portland say the number of calls increased nearly 50% compared to the year before working with the crisis line. A fiscal impact statement hasn't been released yet, but some are critical of the cell phone tax. They say it's double what the health authority says they need, and it could be extra burdensome on low-income residents who rely on cell phones for internet service.
Southern resident orcas in Puget Sound are struggling. A measure in the Washington legislature would ensure that boats give them more space. Eric Tegetoff has more.
Whales are disturbed by vessel noise, but a measure in Olympia would provide a greater buffer for the endangered orcas in Puget Sound. The legislation increases the distance that recreational boaters must maintain from southern resident killer whales, from 400 yards to 1,000. That puts the distance in line with whale-watching vehicles. Joe Gatos, director of the Sea Dog Society at UC Davis, signed a letter of support for the bill, along with other scientists and organizations. He says making distances the same for all boats would be beneficial.
People see those big whale watch boats. They see the name on the side. Okay, I cannot get any closer than that boat. Those whale watch boats are providing a guideline for the public who is not as educated as the whale watchers.
Opponents to some of the bill's language have expressed concern that navigating some parts of Puget Sound could be difficult if southern resident orcas need a 1,000-yard distance. The measure is scheduled for an executive session on Thursday in the state Senate. Lovell Pratt with Friends of the San Juans says a recent study shows orcas need a healthy distance in order to forage for food.
The female orcas, when they're pregnant or when they're nursing their young, they have to consume even more food to do that adequately. And they were particularly impacted by the vessels when they conducted these studies, even more so than the male southern residents.
Julie Watson with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife notes there are only 73 whales left in the southern resident population.
These whales have a lot of pressure on them and their numbers have just dwindled. So we're trying to save this iconic species that's really core to the people of the Pacific Northwest and the people of Washington.
She adds that people can keep up to date online on current laws for viewing whales at bewhalewise.org. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
In last night's State of the Union address, President Biden touted his administration's success in improving the U.S. economy, including a sharp reduction in unemployment. Biden said, quote, "We are building an economy where no one is left behind." He also said, quote, "Restoring the dignity of work also means making education an affordable ticket to the middle class." The president called on Republicans to help him, quote, "finish the job of ensuring economic recovery and healing social and economic divides across the country." Other major issues that Biden addressed included U.S.-China relations, threats to Social Security and Medicare, police violence, gun control, reproductive rights, and political violence. Many media outlets consider Biden's strong performance last night, including fending off boos and hecklers, as a positive sign for his bid for re-election in 2024.
President Biden delivers the State of the Union address. A growing number of New Yorkers want George Santos to resign. And Jerome Powell says the Fed cannot protect the economy from the debt ceiling debacle. With more on these stories, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks. We're following our democracy in historic times.
In his State of the Union, Joe Biden must answer for his failed leadership. Whether it's the border crisis continuing to rage at our southern border, crushing inflation and over $30 trillion in national debt.
While President Joe Biden used his State of the Union speech to outline his economic plans, the COVID-19 recovery, and stressing the need for bipartisanship, House Republicans, including New York's Elise Stefanik, pressed Biden to address GOP priorities. Republican Missouri Representative Jason Smith argued speaking with everyday Americans is the best way to determine what issues need to be addressed. Meanwhile, Democrats were eager to hear the president's speech and capitalize on progress made in the past year. Texas Democrat Veronica Escobar said her caucus knows there is more work ahead, but believes Republican infighting will cause confusion and delay. She contended Democrats are trying to be bipartisan, but the sentiment isn't being returned.
We are willing to work with any Republican when and if they decide to put the American people first.
U.S. Customs and Border Patrol agents testified before the House Oversight and Accountability Committee about the border crisis. Democrats spoke about how more fentanyl is getting stopped at the border, but Republicans noted the number of people carrying drugs into the country is unclear. Florida Democrat Jared Moskowitz lamented the disconnect between the parties.
All we're doing in this hearing is politicizing another issue in this country that doesn't need to be politicized. We all agree that fentanyl is a problem.
Constituents of New York's 3rd Congressional District rallied in Washington to call for the removal of their elected representative, George Santos. In the wake of numerous scandals, including accusations of lying about his credentials and personal life during the campaign, the House Ethics Committee is investigating, and the Republican chair of his district has called for him to resign. Co-founder of the group Concerned Citizens of NY03, Jody Cass Finkel, said Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy can no longer ignore their pleas for Santos's resignation.
We are here because Speaker McCarthy apparently cannot hear us when we speak from Long Island. Speaker McCarthy, you're turning a deaf ear to our needs, but the country is beyond giving Santos the benefit of the doubt.
As political fights continue on the debt ceiling, Chairman of the Federal Reserve Jerome Powell doesn't want anyone to think the Federal Reserve can shield financial markets or their economy from delays in the process. He said there is only one way it can end.
This really can only end one way, and that is with Congress raising the debt ceiling in a timely fashion so that the U.S. can pay all of its bills when and as due. That's what has to happen.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Biden's State of the Union address last night featured boos and jeers from Republicans when he pointed out some of them had suggested sunsetting Medicare and Social Security. As Congress continues to work towards negotiations to address the looming national debt limit, AARP Arizona says cuts to Social Security and Medicare shouldn't be on the table. The group says the government needs to keep its end of the bargain for those who have paid into the programs during their working lives and now depend on them as part of their retirement. Alex Gonzalez reports from Arizona.
As a showdown looms in Congress over whether to raise the federal debt ceiling, AARP Arizona is among the groups voicing concerns about the future of Social Security and Medicare. At AARP Arizona, State Director Dana Marie Kennedy says these are programs Arizonans have paid into and now depend on for their livelihoods. Despite leaders in both parties insisting Social Security and Medicare are off the table, she says some Republican lawmakers are still eyeing trimming these programs to address budget concerns. Kennedy says AARP will fight potential cuts.
It feels a little bit like deja vu. It feels like, you know, we have been down this road before. It's really outrageous to even suggest that cutting Social Security and Medicare in any deal. We have a really strong message to keep your hands off of Social Security and Medicare.
More than 1.4 million Arizonans receive Social Security benefits, and more than 1.3 million rely on Medicare for health coverage. Kennedy stresses these programs are vital for Arizonans to stay afloat, especially with the effects of inflation and higher costs of living. Kennedy says cuts to these programs would leave older Arizonans with difficult decisions. The state is already seeing a wave of seniors experiencing homelessness for the first time due to higher housing costs. She acknowledges the most recent increases to Social Security benefits have been helpful, but says with inflation, it almost seems like a wash.
It doesn't mean that it doesn't help their pocketbook, but we certainly shouldn't be looking at cutting any benefits at this point in time when inflation is so high.
Kennedy adds the government needs to honor its commitments and not have debates on these issues behind closed doors. She says older Arizonans want elected officials to do their jobs, stop the partisan bickering, and bring bipartisan solutions to the table. For Arizona News Connection, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Allison Moore of the Portland Psychedelic Society about an event coming up next month to educate folks on psychedelics and psilocybin use in Oregon. Then we'll hear from Piper McDaniel, an investigative reporter at Street Roots, about a new article digging deep on Portland's so-called expediting groups and their role at City Hall. At 6, it's Project Censored. Then at 7, Magical Mystery Tour. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy, with an overnight low of 36. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny, with a high of 56 degrees. Today in history, in 1978, proceedings of the U.S. Senate are broadcast on the radio for the first time. The quote of the day is from Beat Generation poet Neal Cassady, who was born this day in 1926. Cassady wrote, "Art is good when it springs from necessity. This kind of origin is the guarantee of its value. There is no other."
President Biden highlighted tribes in the infrastructure section of his State of the Union address. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Biden, in his State of the Union address Tuesday night, touched on several issues which are priorities for tribes across the country, from economic development to COVID-19 recovery, broadband to health care. Biden mentioned tribal communities in his remarks when talking about the infrastructure law to fund projects and create jobs. The law set aside billions of dollars for Indian Country for high-speed internet, water, and electricity projects, climate issues, and a number of other investments. Biden touted work being done by his administration, and he called the State of the Union strong. In statements, Republican Oklahoma Native American lawmakers, U.S. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen and Congressman Tom Cole were critical of Biden's State of the Union, both expressing frustration with the president and saying they did not hear solutions or plans to move the nation forward. In a statement, Democratic Native American Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas expressed a need for bipartisanship in Congress. A similar sentiment was made on Twitter by Democratic Alaska Native Representative Mary Peltola, who called bipartisanship hard and messy, but worth it. Meanwhile, guests at the State of the Union included Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin, as the tribe's new president took his first official trip to Washington this week. Nigrin was a guest of Democratic Arizona Senator Mark Kelly, and Lynette Bonar was a guest in First Lady Jill Biden's viewing box. She was recognized for helping establish a cancer center on the Navajo Nation. A new clinic in Rapid City, South Dakota, combines modern design and treatments with Native culture. Now patients are being accepted ahead of the planned construction schedule. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's CJ Keene checks in.
The Oyate Health Center sits on a plot in West Rapid City on the campus of the old Sioux San Hospital. Geraldine Church is president and CEO of the Great Plains Tribal Health Board. She says while bittersweet, leaving Sioux San represents a reclamation of tribal sovereignty.
There's so much history in that old building. It started as a boarding school, and then it transitioned into a tuberculosis center, and then it turned into a hospital. But all of those entities were federally run facilities. And I think what Oyate Health Center symbolizes is a new era of tribally managed healthcare.
Church says embracing sovereignty will have tangible benefits for patients.
What we are embracing here is wellness, not only from the physical standpoint, but we support and recognize that our emotional well-being is such an important part of our overall wellness, right? And so when our relatives come into this building, they'll recognize that which is familiar to them, and as a reminder that this is a safe place.
The new space also increases capacity.
So we'll be able to expand our primary care to a lot more than we are doing now in the current facility. But what we'll also be able to do is provide specialty care. We have partners in the community that we hope will be joining us for those services that we routinely refer out.
The fate of Sioux San Hospital is unclear, and the final decision is in the hands of the Indian Health Service. For National Native News in Rapid City, I'm CJ Keene.
NASA astronaut Nicole Mann told U.S. lawmakers on Tuesday she's proud to represent Native Americans in space and hopes to inspire younger generations.
We need to inspire the youth. We need to empower them to dream, to help them achieve their goals. And so that's the advice that I would give to that young generation. It starts with an idea, it starts with a thought, a dream, but it doesn't stop there.
Mann spoke to the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs on a live video call from the International Space Station. Mann is the first Native American woman to go to space. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The bird flu has infected more than birds. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has recorded avian flu infections in 110 mammals across the country. Oregon's additions to the list include 6 skunks and a raccoon. In other states, bears, foxes, coyotes, bobcats, possums, seals, and dolphins were found to carry the infection. In recent months, the avian flu has killed thousands of birds in Oregon and has led to the death and euthanization of millions of chickens and other domestic birds across the U.S. Because chickens in commercial facilities are particularly vulnerable, bird flu is a major factor in the large jump in egg prices and shortages in stores.
Medications can interact with each other and have adverse reactions for people. Caregivers can decrease the chances of this happening with a few tips. Eric Tagadoff reports.
People taking care of someone should take notice of their medications because interactions between drugs can have dire consequences. In extreme cases, drug interactions can pose a threat to people's health, possibly causing bleeding or leading someone to feel dizzy and fall down. Dr. Lee Ann Mike is a clinical associate professor at the University of Washington School of Pharmacy and notes that patients might have multiple doctors prescribing them. She says one way to avoid potentially dangerous drug interactions is to stick with one pharmacist.
So if you have all of your prescriptions filled at the same pharmacy, the pharmacist would know everything you're on and they could screen more confidently and thoroughly than if you have certain prescriptions at different pharmacies, because the pharmacy computer systems don't always talk to each other.
Mike also says people should take advantage of the time they have with their physician to ask any questions about potential drug interactions. She notes that people might think any drug that is not a prescription is safe and can't cause an adverse drug interaction.
Drug interactions could happen with things that you can purchase over the counter, with supplements, with herbal products, and with other things that aren't considered drugs but can affect a person, like, for example, alcohol.
Mike says some pharmacies can review people's medications, including prescriptions and over-the-counter drugs, but notes that has become harder during the pandemic as more pharmacists are stretched thin in their jobs. But she notes that most insurance companies with Medicare Part D offer medication therapy manager services annually for free to people with those plans. During a comprehensive medication review, patients or their caregivers talk about all the medications they are taking, prescribed or not.
Even if you might have your prescriptions filled at different places, having somebody who's trained and skilled for a comprehensive medication review could identify drug interactions that way.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
The U.S. has Super Bowl fever, and companies with online sports betting apps are hoping the hype will increase their customer base. While the ads for these apps make it seem like there's little risk, researchers who have looked at problem gambling say there are red flags. Oregonians can bet on sports in casinos and online on apps. Sports betting was legalized in Oregon in August of 2019. Minnesota is one of the states in the U.S. that has not legalized the practice, so some residents may travel out of state to bet on sports legally. Mike Moen has more on the story and the risks of sports betting.
The Super Bowl is almost here, and people who've wanted to try those sports betting apps will be putting their money down. Minnesota hasn't legalized this activity yet, but other Midwestern states have, and experts are warning users to proceed cautiously. As more states approve sports betting, some people are being inundated with ads for certain apps. Minnesotans might be drawn to a neighboring state like Iowa, where they can place a bet online after crossing the border. Dr. Michelle Malkin of East Carolina University has studied problem gambling. She says commercials for sports betting apps can be very persuasive.
It looks like fun. There's all these bonuses and things like that. But we aren't necessarily educating individuals on what are the signs of having a problem.
Malkin points out that an app on their phone gives a person the ability to make bets nonstop, even on individual plays, not just the outcome of the game. She adds the so-called free money offered to new customers has to be used for betting and can't be withdrawn. Ads often include information for anyone seeking help with problem gambling, but addiction specialists say there should be stronger warnings. Malkin says some of these options can make it especially hard for younger adults who are of legal gambling age to know when to stop. She says most college-age students' brains aren't fully formed yet, and they might view online sports betting as a revenue source.
It's a huge incentive, especially for people who may not have a lot of money because they're young and they don't have careers set up yet that are giving them a healthy income, to think that gambling might be an answer to financial difficulties in their life.
She warns all it takes is a losing streak after an initial win to fall into a trap. The ads may suggest that a person's knowledge of sports makes it easier to win, but there are always factors out of their control, from players' injuries to controversial referee calls. In the Midwest, Iowa and Illinois allow sports betting online and in person. Wisconsin, North Dakota, and South Dakota only allow such bets at designated casinos. Mike Moen, Minnesota News Connection.
Listening to women can help boost disaster relief efforts. In Puerto Rico, the nonprofit Taller Salud partners with women to provide resources and support during emergencies. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In 2017, Hurricane Maria devastated the coastal town of Luisa in Puerto Rico. A local nonprofit stepped up to support disaster relief efforts, and they started by talking to women.
We women are leading communities. Women are taking care of kids. Women are taking care of elder, bedridden people.
That's Jennifer De Jesus Soto of Taller Salud, a nonprofit focused on women's health and violence reduction. She says because women are often caretakers, they frequently know who is most vulnerable and what their communities need in an emergency. So Taller Salud partnered with women on the ground to distribute food, water, infant formula, and medicine. The group helped set up community kitchens where people could get hot meals and access mental health services, reproductive health supplies, and other support. De Jesus Soto says the lessons they learned during Maria prepared them to respond during Hurricane Fiona this past fall. The team was able to ramp up relief efforts quickly, so women on the ground had the resources they needed to help themselves and others.
When you invest in women, you are investing in the whole community also.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants more union among states.
State of the Union? What about the state of the world? Massive earthquakes in Turkey and Syria killing over 12,000, which will continue to rise with the cold, lack of health care and infrastructure. Northeast America suffered record cold, as Gaia keeps trying to tell us something. The Pentagon spent nearly $2 million to shoot down a Chinese balloon after planning to spend many more millions to increase the U.S. Navy on the edge of China. Alike with Russia, no NATO to hunko on their border. As the Russian invasion of the Ukraine nears its first anniversary, U.S. weapons makers will be flowing champagne. But President Joe says our economy is surging back. Jobs and opportunities will abound. Assuming the obstructive Congress and the deluded Supreme Court will let anything that helps most of us get enacted, while letting the budget sluice be even more diverted from those who need to those who pay almost nothing. What good is a cheerleader when the other team won't hand over the ball? We need a referee with a very strong whistle. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, February 8th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Dan Raphael, and John Nelson. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tagadoff, Alex Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, Mike Moen, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. We're speaking with Allison Moore from the Portland Psychedelic Society.